Extendovite.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
This is the alternative media, exposing government corruption, defending our suspended constitution, demanding the rights of we the people, broadcasting the truth the puppet media dare not report. Long live liberty and death to the new world order. Prepare yourself. This is the alternative media.
And welcome to the Alternative Media. This is your Saturday broadcast where we discuss current events, politics, the disinformation, lies, deceit, and propaganda, the mainstream corporate-owned puppet media, and the fact that the federal government of the United States no longer has any resemblance whatsoever of representation of we the people. It is Saturday, August 1st, 2020. We're in hour two of the broadcast. I'm going to go ahead and get this started immediately because it's going to take pretty much the full hour. Next week, we will resume back to our regular schedule of taking phone calls. But this is Jacob Goodwin. Now, I apologize. The audio is not perfect. Prison phones, recording them like this, it just leaves a little bit to be desired, but it is what it is. This is Jacob Goodwin. I recorded this this past Thursday morning. So, Ken, we'll go ahead and roll the Jacob Goodwin interview.
An inmate at the Virginia Department of Corrections, Augusta Correctional Center. To accept this call, press 0. To refuse this call, hang up. This call is from a correction facility and is subject to monitoring and recording. Thank you for using GTL.
Hello?
Hi, Jacob. How you doing today?
Hey, good morning. How you doing?
I'm doing good. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, sir.
All right. I want to thank you for joining me on the Alternative Media. We are recording this on Thursday, July 30th, 2020 at 9 a.m. I'm talking to Jacob Goodwin. He is imprisoned at the Augusta Correctional Facility in Craigsville, Virginia. And to get us started today, I wanted to kind of go through this from the very beginning. And I've been covering this, Jacob, since August 12th, 2017. I'm sure that's a date that you will never forget. But to get us started, tell the listeners a little bit about yourself and what your life was like before August 12th of 2017.
My life was normal, you know. One of the biggest things that most people that I talk to in prison and, you know, guards and people look at my situation see is that, you know, I've had an extremely normal life, you know. Got two parents who you talk to that, you know, love me. Had a job, a place to live, an apartment. Went to work, paid taxes. I you know, love my country. And you know, there was none of the stereotypes that you think that the media would try to portray. I mean, I guess they have tried to portray on me and my family. None of the stereotypes, you know, the negative stereotypes are true, you know. Not a criminal, never had a criminal record. So,
and, you know, I think that's one of the best points about this. You had no problems with law enforcement, been in no trouble at all, just held a job, working class guy, regular guy, you might say, up until this run-in in Charlottesville.
Well, the funny thing was, when I went to the jail, so I'm sitting there handcuffed to the bench, and was there for like 6-7 hours waiting to be, I guess, booked in, and a detective who I've seen at two of my jobs that I know came in, who always talked to me, and his eyes got, you know, wide as saucers and was like, "What are you doing here?" I said, "Man, hey, look, it's a long story." And he's like, "What are you, you know," so he was interested. He's like, "What is this guy doing here?" So he goes, "Listen to my charge." He says, "What is a malicious wounding? We don't even have that in Arkansas." I said, "Well, I'm they're trying to extradite me out of the state for it." And, you know, pretty much gave him a brief description of what's going on. He was like, "Well, man, you know, good luck. If you need anything, here's my card." And then, you know, I went back to to the housing unit or the pod that I was in. And I met another two people who knew me and were like, they said the exact same thing. What are you doing here? You know, there's a guy I met in the jail. He came into a Baskin Robbins where I was working at, and his wife was pregnant. So he came in getting these shakes always at the same time. And I was like, hey, how's she doing? You know, she's being nice to him, and hey, is she all right? You know, good luck. And he liked me because I was a positive person. He was a positive person. So I get, I get put into the jail, and he's like, what are you doing here? And I'm like, that's the second time I've heard that.
Well, let me ask you this. What led you to go to Charlottesville, August of 2017? I mean, I knew, and a lot of people knew, that the Unite the Right rally was being planned and was coming up. It was about protesting the removal of Confederate statues. I had no expectation that it was going to turn into anything like, this massive counter protest that was involved. But tell us what led you to go to Charlottesville August of 2017.
I've always had, it's never stuck right with me, the removal of the statues. I feel like defacing history is something that, you know, almost all terrorist regimes do. And I think that whether you disagree with the history or not, it shouldn't be defaced or removed. You know, there's a lot of statues up that I probably, you know, completely am against what the person stood for, but am I going to go and tear them down and throw them in the river? No, I'm just going to teach them, you know, I'm going to teach against that. There was also another issue in Charlottesville about the Mayor Wes Bellamy and some comments that he made, and there was a lot of issues that were going on underneath the surface that a lot of people did not know about, which was, you know, Wes Bellamy declaring Charlottesville the center of Antifa, the home of Antifa, and then whenever they tried to pretty much nerf the whole thing and say, look, you can't come at all, I don't care what your rights are, then it became an issue not only for the statues, but an issue of constitutional rights and, the right to assemble. And so when the ACLU reinstated the permit, it was almost an obligation of any person who, you know, wanted to, who likes the idea of free speech and the freedom to, assemble, should show up and make a point that we can't be silenced through terrorism, you know. And so that was my mindset in going to Charlottesville.
Tell us when this is prior to the garage, and we'll get to that. But when you got there that morning, tell us a little bit of what you saw and witnessed as the day progressed.
Well, the atmosphere was. Well, first of all, first thing I noticed was it was very hot. It's very hot, and, there was a bunch of groups, and it seemed like a bunch of people, everyone had got there extremely early, and apparently long before I got there, there was already altercations early that morning. It was kind of chaotic because groups were coming in from all over, and there was really no organization because, you know, there were, like, you know, outside groups that you know, no one even knew about or knew who was showing up, or, you know, you didn't know who they were. And so, and the police did a terrible job of pointing them to where they go, pointing them where they're supposed to be protesting at, and it was nothing like I'd ever seen before. But, you know, the atmosphere was there were a bunch of different groups that were meeting up and talking, and it was definitely an atmosphere of building energy. You could tell something about to happen, and when I got to the rally itself, you know, there was a giant mob of screaming protesters already, so that just heightens your senses, and you realize it's this is real and this is happening, you know, and that you have to have your senses heightened.
So from your experience seeing it on the ground, and I think there was a 207-page report that came out, and it really laid bare how the police and the state police and the local government there in Charlottesville actually done more to create the violence and allow the violence than they did to, you know, keep violence down. So do you believe law enforcement in Charlottesville intentionally caused the fighting and allowed a riot? Because that's what a lot of the reports of people that's looked into this that's supposed to be non-biased have concluded.
Yeah, you're referring to the Heathy report.
Yes.
And it is a great document because it points to everything you just said. He's an outside investigator. He's not biased. He was hired by the city. If you read the Heathy report, which is, you know, you got to have a good attention span because it's a little long-winded, but it's very, very in-depth and talks about blah, blah, blah as it happens. And my reading of it doesn't seem any bias, that he's fabricating anything. And absolutely the police calls everything. You know, the police, it's not even like, hey, do your job, as most people say. The police, not only were they not doing their job, I believe they were instigating it. Like, they, when I walked out of the garage where I was parked at to leave to go to the protested zone, like our, you know, where we had a permit to protest, you know, we asked this female officer with this smug look on her face, you know, like she just, like, she was disgusted at us, you know, and we're like, excuse me, ma'am, where are we supposed to go? And she just points, and we look where she points, and she's just pointing at this giant mob that's standing right in front of the park that is like, you're not going to enter, where they made a wall pretty much. And just, you know, like with like a sadistic smile on her face, like, that's where you got to go. And I'm just like, you could just tell the woman has so much hatred for whoever these people that she thought was, you know, invading her city, as they like to say.
But tell us, and you know, we've most all of us in this audience, we've heard some accounts from eyewitnesses in Charlottesville, but then you've got the media portrayal of what they want to project as what occurred. What happened in the garage as you saw it, Jacob?
Okay, well, pretty much there was a point when the rioting happened right in front of the park, which is where that wall of counter protesters were. The rioting got so bad, and the police came in, and you know, rather than the police pushing them back, you know, away from the area and making them go where their permitted protest zone was, they just put on riot gear, shoot some tear gas at them, and then come in and push everybody in the park right and push them into the counter-protesters, which is where you have the flamethrower incident, the gunshot getting fired, and inevitably the garage incident. And so they push them out of the park and, you know, like they came in like a sweeping motion and pushed them out of the park. And so I was at the very end. It was kind of disoriented. I didn't know where to go. I'm lost. I'm in the city. You know, there's a riot going on. I don't know, you know, which way's up, which way's down. So I'm following this long line of people who were leaving. So I'm like, okay, I need to get back to this garage where I'm parked, okay? Because, you know, the police are saying it's an unlawful assembly. Your permit's no longer valid. You need to leave. So I'm like, okay. So I get to the garage, and I realize, oh, snap, I'm carpooling with somebody, and I haven't seen this guy in hours. So I have no idea where he is or if he's even still here. He might have already left. So then it's kind of sitting in, and at this point I'm standing in the garage, and I'm even citizen court, just a guy that I was talking to, I was arguing with, I was like, what should we do, you know, and he's like, I don't know if we want to stay here because there's a giant mob moving this way. And I'm like, well, where should we, you know, I'm trying to figure out where to go. And so I make the decision. I'm like, hey, look, it's best that we probably don't leave because if we do stay here, they're going to vandalize your cars. They're going to, you know, they're going to be a mob pretty much. We're going to see what's going on in the cities right now. So about the time that I go to leave was when the incident with Harold Cruz happens where they pretty much run up and grab his flag and hit him in the head. And he falls down. And then another guy, hit Harris, and a person runs up and pepper sprays Harris. Tries to pepper spray all of them, but predominantly hits Harris. Harris gets hit in the head by another guy and falls down. Well, when this other guy hits Harris, his buddies see it and try to run. His buddies see it and try to attack him, and he tries to run. He runs into the garage, falls down, and gets knocked out pretty much first shot. And then it's essentially a beating of like two or three dudes on one guy who's already unconscious, pretty much. And so as this all unfolding, I'm like, oh my gosh, this is crazy. So what actually led me into the garage was the fact that I was going to pull those guys off of the guy who hit Harris and Brandon was knocked out. It was 3-on-1, so I was, they say in the court that I was running in there or something. If you look at me, I'm walking over the guy. Well, the thing that struck me was all these people with cameras just standing around watching this guy get beaten, like, while he's lifeless, you know. And I just found it crazy that these media people are sitting there and there's no, you know, inclination in their heart to help this guy. They'd rather sit there and film it, you know. And I'm like, oh my gosh. So I go to help him, and there's this pylon, a big square pylon. So about that time, Harris gets up. He does a pretty much 360, I guess, trying to turn around and run away from the fighting because he's pepper sprayed now. Instead, he runs right into it. As soon as I clear the pylon, he comes in. He's right up on me and startles me. I don't know that he can't see. So, you know, I kind of use my feet to keep him away from me. And, you know, he falls down. He gets up. He falls down again. And when he gets up the second time, he kind of, like, grabs my... I had a plexiglass shield. He grabs it and kind of pulls me with him. So when he pulls me, I kind of turn sideways and my leg lands over him. And that's when a bunch of people who had seen the fighting, who were closer towards the front, were showing up because they saw the fight, and they all turned around and came back to help. So it's about that time when they showed up, and then that's when you had, you know, a couple people were hitting with sticks or whatever, and I landed over them. I picked up my foot and turned around. You know, this whole altercation, it sounds like a kung fu film, but in reality, it only took 6 seconds. I stepped off of him and I backed up, and then a guy ran up and hit me in the back of the head and almost knocked me out. And, I mean, he was so fast. Like, he hit me, and then I turned around and he was gone. And only later, through watching videos, did I see that it got caught on video. And so, you know, there was still combat. There was still mutual combat going on at this point. It wasn't just like, you know, there's still fighting going on. And so Harris gets up and runs away. And that's pretty much how the garage incident unfolded. Like I said, it was 6 seconds, and, you know, I landed 2 kicks out of the whole thing.
You know, it's incredible. Stomach, you know? If you look at, there's so many videos from Charlottesville, and there's so many assaults and attacks and, you know, bottles thrown. Yeah. I mean, and we're going to get to it as we go forward. We're going to get to contrasting this to the insanity we see today, but how long after August 12th was it until you were questioned and arrested? Because if I remember correctly, it was like a couple of months or it was a while between this happening and you being arrested. And how were you identified?
Well, apparently, I guess weaponized autism on the left. I don't know, like they had done some sort of facial recognition and identifying my tattoos and just going all out trying really hard to dox me, pretty much. I really don't know. But then again, you know, it's not like really like I was hiding. That's another thing. It's not like I was hiding. I don't think I did anything wrong, you know. So it's not like I was in a cave somewhere, you know. I was going to work and...
So you were? Was you actually surprised that when this come about that you were going to be questioned and arrested? You had no idea that, because so much had took place there, you had no idea that they would be looking for you.
All right, I believe we're coming up on the break. We'll be back in moments interviewing Jacob Goodwin from Augusta Correctional Facility. You're listening to the Alternative Media. Back in a moment.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing, knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Media Farron in the studio. I'm playing my interview from Thursday with Jacob Goodwin. We'll go ahead and continue, Kim.
Same.
Well, definitely, and you know, and it's like the guy attacked me. You know, I find out way after the fact that he got pepper sprayed and couldn't even see me. You know, it doesn't matter to them, of course, because they're painting a narrative. But it's like, you know, I genuinely thought I was being attacked by this guy who just hit another old man in the head with a mag light. So maybe I should have just gotten down on my knees and asked, "Hey, man, are you hostile?" Or you know, like, I don't understand how these people think that a person in a combat scenario should be thinking. Like, you know.
Yeah, it was in a full blown riot situation. I mean, it's really, you know, a lot of people may not know this side of the story, because have you been interviewed by anyone before? If so, I've not heard it.
Well, a couple people, but I don't think anything like a web or a podcast.
You have 1 minute remaining.
What did you
I'm not sure.
So was it later in October before you were arrested? Was it a couple of months later?
Oh, I think it was October 14th was the day that marshals came to my house. I'm gonna call you right back, okay?
Okay.
Hello, this is a prepaid debit call from
Jacob Goodwin,
an inmate at the Virginia Department of Corrections, Augusta Correctional Center. To accept this call, press 0. To refuse this call is from a correction facility and is subject to monitoring and recording. Thank you for using GTL.
Hey, Jacob, can you hear me okay?
Yes, sir.
All right, go ahead and just take it from there. So, marshals in October showed up at your house.
Well, yeah, and before that, you know, I all of a sudden started getting death threats, you know. And so I'm like, oh, it's okay. Obviously, you know, my Facebook account had been doxxed, but it was private. So, it was a bunch of, like, message requests. So, you can see the message, but you'd like, you know, you have to accept them to get the message, except it's weird how it works. And, you know, Facebook changes so much, it's probably different now. But anyways, so I'm like, okay. And then I was at work, and this girl came in, right? And, you know, I always was very cordial with her, nice to her. And she was a black girl. And she always had this red headband on, or a red bandana on. And so I'm just like, okay, maybe she likes color red. You know, maybe she's a gang member, I don't know. But come to find out, she's actually likes red because it's the color of communism. She's like some sort of Antifa. And so she comes in, sees me, and just walks up and asks me, and it's like, hey, is this you? And shows me pictures of me and all this stuff. I said, yeah, it's me. And she was just like, you know, like she'd seen a ghost. And she's, you know, she talks to me all the time, totally fine with me. And then all of a sudden, now she's acting like I'm a murderer. Like she's trying to sneak. She's trying to sneak out as fast as she could. And I'm like, wow, really? Like I'm going to attack you or something? Like, be realistic, lady. And so, I see her taking pictures of me and everything. So I'm like, okay, I'm full blown docs now. Moving forward, these marshals pick me up. I go to the jail. I realized at that point that I'm facing 5 to 20 years for essentially nothing. I'm just like, what? And that's whenever I found out the charge and everything of what was going on. And, of course, I fought extradition and wrote the governor of Arkansas. Was like, hey, look, obviously these people are trying to make some sort of political stunt. And, you know, there's no way I'll receive a fair trial if you allow them to send me back to this place. You know, maybe you should, you know, I'm open for anything. Maybe you should make a stipulation that the trial should be fair, or that I get a, you know, what is it called? I forgot. Change of venue. And so, but apparently he wrote me this letter, was like, hey, you know, well, if it's, your identity is confirmed, there's nothing we can do. And which leads me to believe, why do we even have that anyways? Why do I have the right to, you know, fight extradition if it comes out to be me? You have no powers, which I think he's just lying. He's political meandering. He doesn't want to get involved. And so, it's about a month or some change, and then they finally, a detective from Charlottesville shows up, puts me on a plane early in the morning, and flies me back to Charlottesville, which is where I was the whole time during trial and everything.
Now, when I talked with your mom and your dad, and I read your appeal, tell the audience about some of the members in the jury that convicted you were involved in Black Lives Matter and took part in the counter protest or the mayhem in Charlottesville. And then when your court case come up for appeal, the appellate court said that none of that mattered.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Imagine that, you know. And this is, you know, not to sound unhopeful or down, but these people didn't just, you know, put me in a kangaroo court convict me, to turn me loose, you know. And the corruption in this state that I've learned goes so, so deep. It's crazy. Like, this is probably the most corrupt state out there. And that goes, that just goes through, it's, I mean, to every avenue, especially in the justice system. Going back to the jury, yeah, there were multiple people that were involved, and multiple people who admitted on their jury questionnaires that they were involved in previous protests, and then they, there were a couple of them that said they weren't there the day of, but though apparently before that happened, there was another protest where they had to use tear gas on the counter-protesters about a month, like a week or so, a couple weeks before.
All right, we're coming up to the break. Thank you.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Extend your life with Extendovite, a seven-herb combination made from garlic, cayenne, bilberry, hawthorn, ginkgo biloba, valerian, and milk thistle. Each herb was chosen for their abilities to help improve irregular heartbeats, chest pain, lower cholesterol, as well as normalize blood pressure and clean and strengthen arteries, plus much, much more. Doctors have taken people off of some or all of their pills just because they believe their patients got better while taking Extendovite. Get the dependability of Extendovite. Just see how you feel in 6 months. A 2 month supply of either capsules or liquid is only $69.95 plus shipping and handling. Call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
The Republic Broadcasting Network, late night premiere show of Red Pill Hardcore, is hosted by activists that want to hear from you, the listeners, so that you can get involved in the activism. Please call in at 800-313-9443 at 10 p.m. to enter the discussion. To book yourself as a guest, call our studio at 202-657-5715 or contact RBN staff. Remember, keep it real and take the red pill.
Is the Second Amendment your line in the sand? Is the United States Constitution important to you? Are you worried about gun confiscation? You need to join us for free at gunconfiscation.com. At gunconfiscation.com, you will meet like-minded patriots, get the latest Second Amendment news, and find anything you need to prepare for gun confiscation. Visit gunconfiscation.com today. That's gunconfiscation.com. Which side are you on?
We're back on the alternative medium. Aaron in the studio playing an interview that I recorded Thursday with Jacob Goodwin. So, Ken, we'll go ahead and return to that.
I don't know if you're familiar with that, but there was a juror that was involved in that, and there was a juror that was there that very morning, said she was jogging by and stopped and joined in for a little while and then decided to keep going home. And there was also a woman who said that she knew the woman who was in the car that was hit by James Fields.
Oh, wow. I was not aware of that.
That's what I thought was crazy. Like, and the judge completely, this is behind closed doors and chambers, and my lawyer was like, "What it says right here, you knew somebody in the car," and she just pretty much was like, "Oh, well, I can't really remember if it was so long, but it was something to the effect of, I answered it wrong or I misunderstood the question," and changed their answer right then. But it said in the questionnaire pretty much that, yeah, I knew someone that, because, you know, apparently he drove in the street and hit a car. There was a car in the middle of that crowd, and she knew somebody that was either hit by the car or in the car. And I'm like, well, that's a little alarming, isn't it?
Wow. I mean, I read the whole document that the appeals court put out, and it was just mind-blowing that they would condone, in an appeal, the jurors that they allowed to be in the jury for your conviction. Now, the audience may not know this because I didn't, but when I spoke to you the other day, I think you said that you're able to watch ABC News in the morning, and I think this will really be interesting. Tell us your thoughts on the vast rioting, looting, and arsons being condoned by the media and the government while you're that's currently happening, while you're in prison for a fist fight, something that happens, you know, in bars across the country every night, and have a sentence of 8 years in prison.
Oh, I mean, it's literally just mind-blowing, honestly. I'm just in shock and awe, and, you know, to give the benefit of the doubt, maybe these people who were, you know, jurors and the judge, maybe they were just completely ignorant to the fact that these are the aggressors and that these are the people who are causing these problems. But, you know, the truth is they probably don't. They probably do know that they were the aggressors. I mean, the proof was right there in the pudding. But to see these riots across the country and to see, you know, my situation, it's just like, how are these people not being, you know, given life sentences by that very, you know, and, you know, another thing that I find very interesting is when it first started happening, the news was all over. Well, you know, I talked to a lot of people on the phone, and they're talking about lots of things that are going on in social media. And, you know, there was a guy in, I want to say, Arizona with the Columbus statue or something. I've never heard that on mainstream media, the news. A lot of these beatings and stuff where these people are getting, you know, pretty much beat down by the rioters. I have not heard a thing about that on the mainstream news, you know, bringing up here and there, but they don't ever shed a bad light on it. They don't ever talk about any of the violence that's going on. It's almost like they've tried to bury the whole thing,
well,
but they still openly promote it.
What is really interesting about the current situation by the biased, prostituted media is they're in support. All of these rioters and arsonists are peaceful protesters, and they are portrayed as peaceful protesters, and they have the right to protest. But now, on August 12th, 2017, where a group had a valid permit to protest the removal of statues, the news media foamed at the mouth for weeks on end, denigrating everyone that attended that as some sort of dirty, rotten, racist, Nazi, hater, white supremacist, where now, you know, these rioters and arsonists, well, they absolutely have the right to protest. They've even, Jacob, a lot of the city councils has voted that the police departments can't use tear gas on rioters. I mean, it's just...
Oh, yeah.
It's surreal.
I wish they would have passed that a little sooner for me.
let me ask you this. Now, I've read different things, and after your release, I read you would be on probation for 20 years. Is that true? And did you get a $20,000 fine?
I got... Okay, now this is very important, because this is what took place in the courtroom, right? So, they found me guilty, and I was just like, oh, man, wow. And so, they take me back down to the... They were holding me downstairs in like a little jail cell downstairs while the jury was deliberating my sentence. Well, then my lawyer comes in and says, hey, they want you back in the courtroom. So I come back up there, and they come out and they're like, hey, can we ask him how old he is? If we suggest a fine, where does the money go? And can we recommend it? Can we suggest a suspended sentence? And so the judge says, well, I'm not going to tell you how old he is. You can, if you give them a fine, the money goes to the city, and you can recommend anything you want, but I'm not obliged to take it. So they say, okay. So we go downstairs. I have a dialogue with my lawyer, and he's pretty much like, hey, listen, this is a good sign, because they just convicted you, but now they're talking about suspending your sentence, which is a good thing. have a year range of 10 years with the option for a suspended sentence if he will do community service, empathy training, pay a $20,000 fine, and a rehabilitation program. So that's what they recommended. So fast forward, it takes him 3 months to sentence me. I go into the courtroom, and the prosecutors and the judge pretty much are like, oh, well, they didn't say a suspended sentence. They said the option to suspend, which is completely untrue. They tried to twist the words and contort them to fit their means. And which was strange because even after my sentencing, I turned on the mainstream radio in Charlottesville and I heard that a woman say, that's not what you're recommended. And these people want me, hung pretty much. So I found that very interesting. So they say, oh, well, it wasn't a suspended sentence. It was the option to suspend, which means we're going to suspend some of it if you did all these things. And so he says, well, I think that the $20,000 fine is a bit excessive. And he says, well, my lawyer had put on the defense. He said, hey, look, Your Honor, if they wanted him to serve 10 years in prison, they would have said 10 years. But they said a rehabilitation program. We know statistically men who just do this much time in prison come out worse criminals than they went in. If they wanted, but they didn't want that for him. They wanted to give him the option to change his life and rehabilitate. And so, you know what the judge says? Well, if you're so worried about him coming out a worse criminal, I'm just going to go ahead and give him 5 years of supervised probation so he can stay on the straight and narrow, or he can go back. And I'm going to add 20 years of good behavior. And I'm just like, wow, that's, your bias is obvious.
So what was your sentence ultimately? Was it 8 years?
So ultimately it was a 10-year sentence, 2 years suspended, a $5,000 fine, 20 years of good behavior, and 5 years of supervised probation.
Wow.
And I talked to people in prison. They're like, that he literally gave you everything he could possibly give you. Like, they're like, you have everything. You have a fine, you have good behavior, you have probation, you have prison time, but they give you everything. And I tell people, like, this is my first charge. And they're like, no, you're lying. I'm like, I'm not lying to you. I've never been in trouble. And they're like, no way. And I'm like, yeah, I've never been in trouble.
Well, I mean, it just proves beyond the pale that this was politically motivated. I mean, you're a political prisoner. It's just no way around it. How soon could you be released? Do you know?
My release date now is 2024. The good time law in Virginia is 85% with no parole. So, and they give time out here like it's going out of style because the prison system makes them so much money, and it's kind of backfired recently because of the coronavirus. So, but there is a good time law that's going up that's trying to knock it down to 75-65%. Which would do, knock a year off my sentence at least. So I'm hoping that goes to the office. And with the political tension and all that's going on, I think it could have an effect on it. But definitely not hold my breath for it. They might give it to everyone but me. That's my luck.
I had a question from a listener, and she wanted to know, in your prison, do people self-segregate by race, and is it safe?
Thing about prison is, it's only as safe as you make it. I know it's a strange way of putting it, but it's only as safe as you make it. You have to understand you're in a really animalistic environment. You have to never portray yourself as a victim or as someone who won't, most times, if someone's going to attack you, any creature, they don't have to work for it. They'll pick an easy target, a big easy prey. And so, a lot of problems that go on in prison are because of things that people do. People put themselves out there. They get involved with drugs. They get involved with gangs. They get involved with this or that. But if you kind of just stay out of the way and do your own thing, And, you know, keep your word. People will respect that. And I forgot, what was the other question?
Do people self-segregate by race in prison?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. It was a little worse in Arkansas. I met a lot of prisoners when I was in Arkansas, like people who came from the prison and told me a lot about the prison system in Arkansas, and I saw it in the jail as well. And then when I came to Virginia, I seen that it was a little less segregated, but it still is, you know, all the sentiments there, definitely. And, you know, the reason being is because we don't have, bosses or cultural Marxist commissars beating into us. You know, this, we're left completely to our animalistic natures in here, so of course we divide up just like any other organism on the face of the earth, you know.
Can people send you books?
Oh, yes.
Is there any, I'm going to give out your address here in just a second, is there any certain type of books, any certain subject matter that you would prefer?
No, I really read just about anything. Not that I know of. I like to read, so I'm really, usually if you think it's a good book, I'll probably think it's a good book, you know. I do like nonfiction, usually. I like to read things to help me to learn skills or learn something, you know, or at least something serious, you know.
I will give out your contact information. Also, I wanted to get your thoughts on Ramos, Daniel Borden, Richard Preston. That's the guy who fired a shot at the ground in the face of a flamethrower. Got 8 years. They claimed that was within 1,000 feet of a school. Anything you'd like to say about the others? James Fields, that has been incarcerated because of the events of Charlottesville?
I mean, I think that it's awful. You know, they put us all together. They had at the jail, we were all together in one pod. So we all spent time with each other, you know. So I got to know them. That was
you have 1 minute remaining.
Hey, do you want me to just call you back?
Yeah, call back and we'll do maybe about 8 or 10 minutes, and that way it'll fit into our time slot. So, yeah, call me back.
Okay.
Thank you for using GTL. Hello, this is a prepaid debit call from
Jacob Goodwin,
an inmate at the Virginia Department of Corrections, Augusta Correctional Center. To accept this call, press 0. To refuse this call, this call is from a correction facility and is subject to monitoring and recording. Thank you for using GTL.
Hello?
Hey. I can hear you. So you were actually in a pod with them at some point. So that's pretty interesting.
Well, yeah, they put us all together. So I spent a year, give or take, with almost all of them. The only person who didn't was the last guy. I think Davis was his name. He self-segregated himself and wouldn't come in the pod with us or something. It was a strange situation. I don't know what happened with that.
Wow.
But Ramos threw one punch and got 6 years. Preston fired a pistol into the ground and I guess got homicide on a worm. And the guy who he shot at got convicted for reckless endangerment for using a flamethrower and got his entire sentence, a year with his entire sentence, but 10 days suspended, and then the prosecutor says, he's been so helpful, I asked that he has to do his time on the weekends, and I'm just thinking, you want to give me the death penalty, and you're asking this guy, you know, gets off free, like, that just shows how biased that prosecutor was, who's working for, you know, Antifa.
Do you think the white nationalist movement has stood by the political prisoners like yourself? Since this happened, like they should.
Absolutely, 120%. There were people in the street that I talked to on a day-to-day basis who were, you know, good friends of mine who I would... One thing about me is, and I'm not just not egotistical, I'm not an egotistical person, but I always made time. If someone needed my help, if a person said, hey, man, I'm moving this weekend, I'll say, hey, man, do you want me to help you move? You know, I got things to do, but I will help you. I'll stop what I'm doing and come help you move your furniture and everything. And I was that type of guy. I was raised, you know, someone needs help, you help them. And all these people that I've talked to in the street and were good friends with, very few of them have written me. Very few of them have taken the time to reach out to me. But yet someone from another country is writing me a letter saying, it's terrible what happened to you. You know, keep up the good fight, man. You know, I support you. And that means all the difference to me. Like, they have stood behind me and helped my family and, you know, exponentially.
And, you know, your mom and dad have really stepped up and kept awareness of your situation in the alternative media the best that they can, and I want to applaud them for that. And I wanted to give you the opportunity to say anything you would like to say. I mean, there's so much from this experience that you may have to share. So, one, before we wrap it up, I want to thank you for joining me today. I think it is a disgraceful shame the way you've been treated through this, Jacob, and you know, you're really standing up tall against it in the face of the situation that you've been dealt. And I want to thank you for joining me today, and I want to give you the opportunity to say anything you'd like to share with the audience. And during this broadcast, I will give out all of your contact information, and hopefully people will write you some letters and we'll send you some books.
Okay. Well, how long do I have to talk then? A few minutes?
Yeah, 2 or 3 minutes. Go right ahead.
Okay. Well, I want to say thank you not only for, you know, support and, you know, the help that you give me to get my voice out, but I want to say thank you for also being an alternative media platform. It's very important what you're doing, because all the news and media is completely controlled, and you know, the reasons that their ratings are dropping like flies is because we have alternative media. So if you're really doing our country justice, then that's staying true to the American way, you know. But also, I want to say to your listeners that there is a, I guess, a Marxist revolution going on in this country, and you know, you can listen to all the podcasts, or you can read all the books, or you can have all the most, you know, romanticized views, but it does not equate 1 second to five minutes of activism. You know, one thing that I have to say about Antifa is they're not scared. They're out there doing it. You know, they're not scared because they're not being persecuted, but they're still not scared. One thing that I can say that I'm proud of is that I didn't sit on the couch, you know. Although I've been, you know, kangaroo courted and falsely imprisoned, I'm still not scared. You know, if anything you can take from my situation is I'm not scared. A man like me, you can't beat me in the head. All you do is strengthen my resolve. And that's the way we have to be if we're going to keep our way of life and keep our country the way that it was supposed to be. And that's the biggest thing is I want to say, you know, if you believe in something, you believe in what's happening is wrong in our country, you believe what happened to me is wrong, well, go out and at least talk to somebody, show up in person and you know, and do something that you feel in your heart will make an impact, because that's what they're all doing.
Well, I will, I'll stay in touch with you. We will do this again. Stay strong. Your story needs to be heard. People need to understand, and I've said this on my broadcast, I'm going to say it again, if it can happen to Jacob Goodwin, it can happen to me, and it can happen to you, and that's what we all need to bear in mind. So, again, thank you so much for joining me today, and I'll be in touch with you, and we, a few months down the road, we'll catch back up and recap this and see what's happening with you, and I guess your case is really done. There's no more appeals, so you will just you will have to see what release date you can end up with, I guess, correct?
Right. Well, there's a habeas corpus that I'm going to file. I'm going to fight this all the way to the end just to say that I fought it, but don't put much faith in it.
I understand. Well, I will talk to you soon. You have a good day, and thank you again so much, Jacob.
Yes, sir, definitely. You have a great day. Thank you for everything. All right, thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, there you have it, Jacob Goodwin. That was recorded Thursday, July 30th, 2020 at 9 a.m. I'm going to give out his address again, Jacob Goodwin, and then you follow that with his ID number, which is 193-12-15. Then Augusta Correctional Facility, The address is 1821 Esteline Valley Road, Esta, E-S-T-A, Line, L-I-N-E, one word, Valley Road, 1821 Esteline Valley Road, Craigsville, just like it sounds, Virginia, and the zip is 24430. And I hope everyone enjoyed that. I mean, it's really a window of insight of just how totally corrupt the judicial system in America is, and how if they so choose to, they will railroad you beyond belief. And you've got a complicit media, and you got to have a complicit government to have the ability to do that to that extent, like we're seeing right there. So normally I don't do that type of pre-recorded interview. I like to do live radio, but in this situation, that's what we had to do. Next week, we should return to the regular format. I'm looking forward to your calls. Had a story here from Virginia Mercury. After a night of destruction, protest in Richmond involving a torch dump truck, shattered windows, the mayor, LeVar Stoney, made a surprising claim. White supremacists marching under the banner of Black Lives Matter, he said Sunday, had spearheaded the violence. A story I didn't have time to get to. Also, the cache of information that has supposedly been unsealed about Ghislaine Maxwell, she's appealed, so we're not really getting to see much of that as of yet. And also, if you get a chance, and I think this is needtoknow.news, but I will try to confirm that. There is a story on the racist platform. Yes, needtoknow.news. You need to read the Democratic National Committee's platform. It negatively references whites 15 times. I mean, it's just unbelievable. I mean, you want to talk about a utopian pipe dream, what they're proposing there. Things has changed. Things has changed drastically. Not only is the government and the media propagandizing us with this COVID-19, they're using the race riots to divide the country. Until next week, when they come for your gold, give them the lead. When they come for your guns, give them the bullets first, and God help us all.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748.